This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Am I more than you bargained for yet? I've been dying to tell you anything you want to hear, because that's just who I am this week.
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete. I'm with my buddy Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, brother?
Oh, same old, long weekend here. Just getting into it. Nothing too exciting going on in wrestling, it seems, at this period. Except for, I guess, WWE is where all the focus is because they're gearing up for Mania weekend. But the indies and everything have been kind of quiet. No big stories.
What about all the Impact stuff? The Hardy's leaving? And
Oh, yeah.
I know, I don't follow Impact, but yeah, but I mean, I guess it's been being talked about. Hardy's leaving, and who else left? the other big act they have, I can't remember who the hell it is.
What's his name? Drew Galloway.
Oh yeah, Drew Galloway, and then I hear the Bennetts are leaving too.
Yeah, and Jade, and probably Eddie Kingston. Not that, you know, those aren't the big deal people, so.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, but fuck, I mean, I don't give a shit about TNA anyway, so.
Right, exactly.
We have a lot to talk about. I mean, we have CWF Mid-Atlantic, we have Ring of Honor, we have NXT, and then we watched the first Evolve show. What number was that?
78,
okay. Did you watch both of them by chance?
I watched most of 79, or actually, I watched the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah, I liked 79 better than 78, but we're talking about 78.
Well, hell, let's talk about 79. How's that?
Yeah, well, I didn't write any notes down.
Well, that's so, fine with me then.
Yeah. I mean, I could probably wing it, but I just threw that. It was like a week ago, so my brain is already fried and stuff. So, but hey, let's start off with CWF Mid-Atlantic. And we open up with Kane Justice versus Montana Black. And have you ever seen Montana Black?
Just a little bit. I think he was on an episode or two of CWF previously.
Okay.
I think that's where I've seen him before, but other than that, no.
Okay, well, he has good size, and I liked the promo by Kane to start. I mean, it wasn't like some blowaway promo, but it was a good, solid promo, and I enjoy this dynamic of Kane, the little chicken shit heel versus Montana Black, the walking tall, big guy, a baby face, and right off the bat, they're playing that story up where Montana Black is just, it's just too big to start, just dominating Kane, and Kane's out, takes a powder, and he's jawing with the crowd, and of course, Kane's going after the arm, you know, trying to set up the twist ending. Again, though, Montana sizes too much and cuts him off. Kane out quicks him and starts kicking the leg, and I kind of like that story. I wish Kane would have stuck with that a little more, because I would have liked to see him try to chop the tree down type of thing. But I mean, his bread and butter is the arm, and that's what he goes back to. And I like him going after the arm, but you know, Bob Montana just kind of shucks him away, and then we see this really nice big belly to back suplex by Montana. But Montana's selling the arm pretty good because Kane's gotten some good, decent work on it and got some decent heat on it. And Montana's selling it, which is the narrative of the story. But you know what? Again, Montana's size is too much and he's taking it to him. We see this really nice spin bump by Kane off the clothesline. And I love the Kimura that Montana uses a suplex on. Montana's still selling the arm. Kane gets the arm and finally gets him the tap. I thought this was a good bout. The one thing I didn't like from Kane in the match was those chops in the corner. Did you see those?
Yeah, they did not look great.
Yeah, he needs to, like, fucking at the chop, hit him. a little light. And, of course, you know, Montana no-sells him. And every right, I don't know, maybe that was the narrative that he was so exhausted. His chops weren't registering, so maybe that's what they were going for. For me, they just looked like chops that just didn't know that needed some fire too. But overall, I liked the match. It gave it like 2 and 3/4. So I thought it was a kind of a different Kane that we saw.
Yeah, and I think that that was really interesting. I think in the beginning, Kane's swagger on the promo, I think, was the best part. Necessarily the lines and the delivery may have not been, you know, knock out of the park, but his confidence in the way he carried himself was nice. And I like the kind of calling Montana Black Montel White, kind of just calling him out by saying the wrong name and messing with him there. So I thought that was good. And yeah, again, the difference in Kane that we saw here is he doesn't usually wrestle guys that are this much bigger than him that dominate him this way. And so you could really tell the difference by the way that he sold and the way that he worked. And one little detail, and it's something I pointed out before about his trainer, Trevor Lee, so I wonder if he picked it up from Trevor, is as he's getting worked over big time, his hair comes out of the bun. And normally, you know, we see Kane Justice, his hair is pulled back tight, he looks proper, he's in control, he's dominant, he's always got a plan. Here his hair comes out, it looks all frayed and all over the place as he's getting the shit kicked out of him more than he's used to. So I like the way that that little difference shows that, yeah, he's been being taken to his limits here. Going after the leg, I did find interesting, as you said, he goes for the leg, but I thought it was kind of a good set up the way that what they did was he goes for the leg, but it doesn't really work. And what finally gets Kane any kind of purchase is he gouges at the eyes and is able to hit a flying knee to the arm, which sets up the Break's special kind of arm wrenching. And then that's where he's on the arm now. So I kind of like the idea that he was looking for the leg, that wasn't working, so he goes for a cheap shot, and from there he's back on the arm. The vertical suplex Kimura spot was fantastic. And I did like the finish as Kane is thinking, I'm just going to take off. Black comes after him. He does hit a chop that, you know, can just tell is not going to do anything. So Montana Black again, and you could almost say that the weak looking chops were maybe not a rope-a-dope, but giving Black the false confidence, because as Kane again throws out a cheap block that doesn't look like it's, or a cheap chop that looks like it's not going to do anything. Montana Black gets cocky, tries to pop him up. As he's popping him up, Kane just goes right back to that arm. Boom, Kimura rolls it over. So he's got the arms in his legs. He's got the leg scissor on the arm. So it is like his twist ending submission hold. So I like that he was able to transition to his finishing hold. And he gets the submission. I gave it 3 stars. I'm right there with you, but I think I liked it a little bit more. And I think I picked up a couple narrative details that maybe I'm, you know, making up there that made it stand out a little bit more to me as a better match.
That's cool. Next up, we got that, 4-way student match with Cam Carter versus Jacob Ryan versus Ian Maxwell versus Patrick Scott. What'd you make of this, man?
It was a lot of action. All the guys looked pretty good. Obviously, Patrick Scott got the most kind of gimmicky thing to him, so they have him go over in the end as he's the more character guy. I thought Cam Carter really looked the best. I thought Jacob Ryan, with the knee tremblers and some of his running strikes, looked good. I felt like Ian Maxwell didn't do much to have himself stand out here, but everybody else really did kind of got the most out of this. I think especially Cam Carter. I think a lot of Cam Carter's kind of high-paced action, striking, flips, all that looked really good. I gave it 2 stars, though. I mean, realistically, there's not much story other than Patrick Scott is full of himself. He gets the win in the end, and it's a bunch of young, hungry guys, but that's fine. You can't expect a lot out of a match like this.
I liked even more than you. I gave it 3 stars, and I thought it was just a real fun sprint, and I thought it was a real change of pace for the crowd from what they're accustomed to, because this was just a flat-out high spot show, and I enjoyed it, and the crowd was totally digging it. I think I liked it more than you. Next up, we got Roy Wilkins versus Dirty Daddy, and again, I enjoyed this. I gave it 2.5 stars. I thought this was a fun little match. I liked the mat work early. I'm liking Wilkins destroying Dirty Daddy's back. We see him working the abdominal stretch, the bear hug. Just a really good psychology match, you know, that had a story. And we get to see where Dirty, I think where Dirty Daddy's at his best, which is selling. And he got to sell and fight from underneath, and just, you know, it's just that experienced veteran versus the young gun story, really told well, and with Dirty Daddy being a great character and having a lot of charisma. What'd you make of it?
I'm pretty much there with you. I think there's little details that Wilkins does in his matches that really make him stand out. Is from the beginning, he's slowly dominating Dirty Daddy on the mat, and then as soon as Dirty Daddy shows off some prowess on the mat, that's when Wilkins goes right into using some cheap tactics and going in and out of the ring, having the coach, you know, distract, all that stuff. So I always like that Wilkins really does play up that guy who's, you know, he's talented and he could probably beat you, but as soon as it gets difficult, that's when he's going to take any shortcut he can get. So I always really like that. Dirty Daddy fired up with the charging forearms in the corner look fantastic, but I love that, you know, he doesn't let him go too long before Wilkins cuts him off. He drops down, you know, and then there's a really nice counter into an abdominal stretch that the commentary puts over great, and I thought it looked good as well. And yeah, just lots of BS from the coach in the end, and then, you know, he gets the submission with the figure four. And again, it's just, I think Roy Wilkins, the coach, are just fantastic. They get the act. They know everything that needs to go into it. They put together the matches really well. They all hit their parts perfectly. And the coach is starting to grow on me a little bit. I agree with you still that he kind of maybe chews up the scenery a little bit too much, but I'm starting to kind of get into the gimmick and like it a little bit more. I give it 2 3/4 stars here. I think Daddy is a really interesting young guy. It's tough for me. He's very good, but I just feel like he definitely does get outshined by Kane Justice as the kind of rising generation league guy, right? But Daddy is a guy who's definitely still very interesting, and I'm excited to see where he goes from here.
That's cool. Next up, we got that Battle Royal. What'd you make of the Battle Royal?
The Battle Royal is fine. I mean, the big spots were Donnie Dollars getting rid of Mecha Mercenary, and then Donnie Dollars getting eliminated essentially right after that. You know, there wasn't. I mean, it's a Battle Royal. They were all really smart in here. They weaved in some background story stuff, but realistically, it was a lot of young guys who haven't been around with some of the regulars of CWF Mid Atlantic. All vying for the shot. I liked Eric Andrews on the floor kind of complaining about the situation and playing up his heel stuff. And then the finish I thought was good as Tahir gets the win and he's instantly jumped by Andrews.
Yeah, that was actually my favorite part of the match was the cutaways to Andrews complaining and cutting in his promo to start the match. I thought Andrews kind of made this really entertaining. And then we got Andrews and Tahir Jones. You know, Andrews gives him the Pearl Harbor right off the bat, but you know what? Tahir James, he looks like a real blue chipper. Like, he looks like a mega, really good athlete. Andrews controls the bout, and he's using all his tricks to control it. So, we don't get to see much, but, you know, it was okay. 2 stars. What do you think of it?
Yeah, very similar. I'm there with you. I think I gave it 2 1/4. I think it's tough. Tahir Jones looked good. Great fiery babyface. But CWF is so much like those old territories from the, you know, 70s, 80s, to where I wonder, Eric Andrews is really fucking good at putting together these matches. And again, another guy who gets his act and really kind of accentuates it, to where I question, like, how good is Tahir Jones not in there with a guy like Eric Andrews? I'd need to see that before I get too excited. But he filled his role here fantastically. So, you know, he may be a guy to pay attention to. But yeah, I enjoyed the match. I liked Eric going after the back to set up the last fall spike, and he ends up getting it. And Eric Andrews is a guy who's quickly become one of my favorites on this show as well. But it's so tough to vie for that top spot of being your favorite on CWF because everybody is just so good at their roles, and everybody's just so good in general.
Yeah, I'm with you, and stuff. What do you think of John Skyler? Wait, did we talk about John Skyler and Snooty Fox?
No. Okay. For some reason, don't even remember it.
Oh, you don't? Okay, it was the main event.
Oh, Jesus. Did I not it somehow?
Okay, I mean, I guess not. Okay. I liked it. I thought it was a fun brawl. I liked, there was this funny little spot where, Snooty Fox spits water in Skyler's eyes, and he sells it. Snooty hits the post, and this allows Skyler to go after the shoulder and the neck. And Skyler is all over the Fox for the heat. Skyler's strikes I thought looked fantastic in this. But they had this sleeper spot that went a little too long. I thought it was good, a good little fight. I gave it 2 3/4 stars. It wasn't blow away, but it was a good, strong match. And overall, I thought this was a really good show, showcasing a lot of guys. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know how I pulled this off missing. I think I pulled a Stephen Graham and fell asleep during part of the show, which that's a deep cut if you've been listening to This Week in Wrestling since the start.
I know, man. That's an insult.
But I think that this is a great episode, and I really do love when CWF does this, where they bring in a lot of guys from other schools and they make a big deal about it. This was a Rising Generation League branded episode, branded show, and it's good stuff because you got to replenish those waters. And I think that the problem with, say, like an NXT is doing a weekly TV show with just developmental. It really kind of exposes all these guys, or you have to do stuff like sign Chris Hero and Nakamura and have them wrestling these green kids instead of doing what they should be doing on the main roster. So kind of sprinkling it in so you get a little peek at them, but you don't necessarily expose them every week. Having them mix it up, especially with, you know, the veteran guys who are really fucking good, just to help them get better and look better. This is like the way you do it. So this is like almost a developmental episode of CWF, and it's realistically the format that, say, an NXT should be following more.
No, I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. But hey, let's move over to Ring of Honor television. And it opens up with a Chris Daniels promo, and then Adam Cole comes out, and then it's a misdirect as Adam Page attacks Daniels. Then Kazarian comes out and saves. I thought it was a good, solid opening. What do you think?
Yeah, jokingly, because when I went to go see ROH in Vegas, the guy I was with kept making jokes that he confused the two Adams, the Cole and the Hangman. So here I was like, Adam Cole used his multi-man attack and snuck up behind Chris Daniels while he was also in front of him. But yeah, I think it was a decent open, and it sets up the impromptu tack a la, like, 2009 SmackDown.
Yeah, and the one thing about that Daniels that's kind of going for him is that he lost his hair at an early age, so it doesn't look like he's really aged all that much. I mean, you can tell he's aged, don't get me wrong, but with the hairline being gone for as long as he's being bald for as long as he has, people don't realize how old he is, you know?
Yeah, you lose track of it unless you think of it. And I remember when he did have some semblance of hair. I don't think I remember seeing him. He kind of referenced that, like, having long hair. And then I was thinking back, and I'm like, I remember him ever having long hair, let alone, you know what I mean? I remember him barely having any short hair. And then he kind of references, well, I don't know about the long hair part. So, but it is true. And he was one of the smart ones. Instead of trying to hang on to it like Baron Corbin, he just shaved it all off instantly.
Yep, and said, screw it, and actually helped the character. What do you think of the Addiction versus Cole and Page opener?
I think I liked the opening as the Addiction are hot and heavy, but this is another match where we come back from break and Bullet Club are just in control. So it really kind of, that always kind of irks me in these matches. Fish on commentary here, he was really kind of the epitome of that. He's too much in wrestler mode. He was too busy on getting himself over and his own stories over to be an effective color man at all here, and it just kind of really took me out of the match. Kaz looked really great. When everything broke down, he really stood out. I thought that was good. Daniels is looking for a fight and taking it to Cole as much as he can, and then Cole just kind of sneaks out with the getting the boots up on the best moonsault ever and gets the schoolboy pin. So you kind of show that Cole was able to kind of sneak out the win. Daniels takes the pin, so you're building up the doubt. Can he do it? Can he beat this guy? But as a unit, Addiction looked good, which I think is important for future storytelling here.
No, I totally agree. I kind of liked this match. I thought it was pretty heated, and it was all action. I like the Addiction with the shine, the start. Daniels hits a double tope on Cole and the Page. I thought it was really good. Club cuts them off, and the club's beating on Daniels. Hot tag to Kazarian. He was on fire. Joey calls, I'm reading something off. The club then cuts them off, and the club's beating on Daniels. Hot tag to Kazarian. He was on fire. Then they kind of pair off into like almost like lucha pairings, and then ends up with Cole with this big steal of the victory on Daniels. Overall, that was fun stuff. Like in the, you know, like if we didn't get the commercial break, probably in the 3-star range. But it's, you know, and it's kind of, it's just, it was just there. But it's kind of surprising to see Daniels eat the pin when he's going over to face Adam Cole. But I guess they have a different narrative they're trying to push here. Then we got the Fish promo, which I thought was good stuff. And then we got that video of Daniels and Kaz arguing. And it's like Kaz is going to go heel. He's going, you know, they spoiled it on a Rising show, is that he joins Bullet Club, which is so dumb. What do you think?
See, I didn't even know it was on the Honor Rising, but I was watching a like one of their VOD house shows the other day, and he came out in Bullet Club clothes, and I was like, ah, jeez. Like, and I'm trying to figure out, like, then I went back and rewatched this episode, and I was like, did he turn on this episode? Did I miss it? And, you know, after I missed a whole match on CWF, I really was questioning myself, but I double-checked, and I was like, no, he didn't turn on this. So, I guess what it was on, or I don't even know where it is that he turns. He supposedly turns on TV that hasn't aired yet, is that it?
Maybe, yeah. It hasn't aired yet, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the other thing with Ring of Honor. They can't really keep their... And, you know, Kevin Kelly, now that he doesn't really technically work for Ring of Honor, he doesn't have to keep storylines private anymore and stuff. So he has no problem, you know, letting that cat out of the bag.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a decent story, but it's jumping all over the place. And again, it was, as I said, I think it was... The Addiction looked good as a unit, but Daniels is just a step slow and he gets beat. And then you show the spy cam, oh, it looks like the Addiction might break up. So I think that's kind of the narrative that they're showing, that, oh, you know, all of the good that Daniels has been able to do has always been having Kaz in his corner, and now he doesn't, and things are falling apart, I think is the story that they're trying to tell.
What did you make of the John Skyler versus Sean Carr match?
Sean Carr didn't look very good here, honestly. Skyler probably should have really taken more of the match, though. Like, I think they gave too much offense to Carr, who didn't look great, especially if Skyler was going over. I think that they really kind of missed the boat on just using this match as more of a shine for Skyler in general, especially, you know, with him winning the match and moving on in the tournament and being a pretty decent worker. I think that the problem with Skyler is... he might be one of these guys who thinks of himself more highly than he really should and thinks like, oh, I can have a match out there where I can make this guy look really good and get myself over really good. And then in the end of it, come out looking even better and both of us will look great. And he's really not quite, he's not that Ric Flair guy yet. And he can have a good match, but I think he should have focused on one thing in this match. And that one thing was getting himself over.
I agree. Totally agree. You need talent like that who could try to, you know, try to make you and make yourself and your opponent. But yeah, here at this point, you need to be trying to making yourself in this tournament situation. I thought Carr looked all right, and I thought it was because of Skyler working with him. And I thought the match. What they did, they tried to do was help both guys, and in a way, it kind of did, but it wasn't as effective as if Skyler was an elite worker. Skyler's a good worker, don't get me wrong, but he was working like he was one of the elite workers who can make people and give him all the offense, but still keep his heat or his shine or whatever. Then we get that Cody Rhodes promo, which I thought was pretty effective. Then we get the Kingdom promo, which was a little weird. Which would you make the Kingdom promo and the Cody promo?
The Cody thing was good because I think it registered for me as well, and it was one of the kind of the where they're trying to hawk merchandise things. And a lot of times those don't even register to me. But here, because it was Cody, they actually did a good job of kind of mixing both and making it a promo where he's talking. He's kind of wink nod talking shit about Jay Lethal and pushing like buy my shirts, and then he's like, and I'm over this, I'm out of here. So I thought that was good, you know, because a lot of these it's just, you know, it's ACH with the coloring book and the backpack, and it, you know, it just comes across corny. Here they did a good job of making it work in that regard. The Kingdom promo, I was really big on them, but they're really starting to look way too wacky and cartoony. And I think that Vinny Marsalia's jacket was part of what really makes it weird. And then I noticed he had little beads in his hair. I mean, the guy's just going a little bit too far off the deep end. I liked it better when TK O'Ryan and Vinny were kind of like the hired muscle for Matt Taven. And Matt Taven was the cult of personality with the wacky clothes and the whole getup. And they were just not bland, but they were more kind of just there. And having them just have all these different looks and adding in weird shit. And I don't think they should let Marsalia talk if they're not going to really script him tight. Because it sounds like he's the kind of guy when they're letting him say shit. And he's just saying random weird stuff that he thinks is like going to pop people. But realistically, yeah. It's just kind of cringy.
Yep.
Yeah, so I wasn't into the promo at all.
Yeah, he was a guy trying to play a character as opposed to being... It didn't come across organic at all, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Then we got, like, an angle match. We start off, it's supposed to be the Tempura Boys with Smoke Shitty Machine Guns. But the guns never show up, so, angle alert, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then we got some fun Fish and Cole promos. Any thoughts on those?
Again, I think Fish is a pretty great promo guy. Cole is obviously also very good, and you know it's hype for a match that realistically feels like it's already being treated like an afterthought when it hasn't happened yet because they're already building to the next match, and it's kind of funny because there's some people who are complaining about Progress Wrestling from the UK, which we actually haven't reviewed one of their shows in a while, but they haven't announced any of their matches for their WrestleMania weekend shows, and people are kind of complaining like, how are you going to do that? But they're saying, we don't like to announce matches until the show before it happens. And it's kind of smart. ROH is in the position where they're talking about, you know, the Fish-Cole match. But realistically, everybody knows the big deal is Daniels versus Cole at the pay-per-view. And it just kind of makes this match, even with two good promo guys, feel unimportant.
Yeah, I can see that. Then we got Marty Scurll versus Donovan Dijak. I like this match for a lot of things. I thought it helped both guys in a way, but it also made Dijak look like a really dumb babyface at times. But, I mean, better than walking away off the promotion after a really hot match, and he still had a pretty hot match. Dijak's on fire, showcasing all his huge moves. Eirik stops Dijak's momentum. Dijak with another flurry, and then we get this commercial and ends up with both guys are on the floor. Dijak eats the post. Dijak so here's stupid babyface number one. He actually goes and shakes the hand of Marty Scurll, who his whole hand is gonna be stronger than yours, and we all saw it coming, where Scurll was gonna do something to Dijak's hand, so it just made Dijak look like a dumb baby face. Dijak tries a comeback, Scurll low level dropkick stops him, and now we see Lio Rush watching, cause that's where the real feud's going. Dijak throwing everything he can. Dijak again, a babyface number two stupid move. He still wants Marty Party to shake his hand. Why? And of course, it leads to him getting stretched, getting his hand all mangled and stuff. I really good match. I mean, it was a really good match. I gave it 3.5 stars. And at least where a Rush and Scurll face off, Rebellion saves, and then Motor City Machine Gun comes out, to not knowing exactly where Lio Rush's loyalty lies. But overall, I thought this was a good match. What about you?
Yeah, I'm probably right there with you. And as you said, it's probably best case scenario for Dijak leaving the company like this off this match. Because, I mean, this is easily the best Marty Scurll title defense since he's won this TV title that I've seen.
Yep.
And it was all because of Dijak. Like, Dijak made this match. I mean, realistically, Scurll did his same bullshit that he always does. A lot of heel stuff that the crowd just goes apeshit for, which just drives me crazy. I like a lot of no selling out of Dijak, which I think was great. But, you know, a couple interesting spots. Like, he gets his leg caught up on the apron. Marty takes forever to run in and then run out and then jump over and then go for that apron super kick. And I love that Dijak didn't just stand there like an idiot and take it after having been stuck there with his leg for so long. He actually blocks it. So I was really expecting, I was like, oh God, Dijak's going to make himself look like a complete idiot here. But he doesn't. He actually kind of saves it. From there, I mean, I love Dijak teasing the choke breaker over and over again. But yeah, trying to beg for the handshake was dumb. I did like Dijak. He's going for the feast your eyes. It gets countered into the chicken wing. As he's going for the submission, or it gets transitioned at some point into like a pin, and you could hear a kid in the crowd when Skrull kicks out just shouting no, like someone in there had no fucking clue that Dijak's leaving, nothing. They want Dijak to beat Marty Skrull so bad there. I just kind of loved that moment. There's a This Is Awesome chant that felt forced and not really like the crowd was into it. They just knew they were supposed to chant. And then, yeah, we get the finish. It's probably one of the loosest, sloppiest looking chicken wings ever. I mean, he just kind of has his arms on him. He doesn't really have a submission.
Yeah, it was light. Yep.
He's like holding his he's holding his chin bone and his arm. That's all he's doing. He's not really, it's not a chicken wing at all. So.
Yeah, it looked like he was like a lifeguard jumping into deep water and trying to keep the guy afloat, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. It looked less like oh my God, that's an apt description. So yeah, again, as I said, Dijak looks like $1 million coming out of this when it comes to if you're another company that's prospectively wanting to book him. As you said, stupid babyface stuff aside, I think you go, oh, fuck, he took their TV champion to a really good match. And you can't blame it on, I mean, it's hard to give the credit to anybody but Dijak, because we see Marty Skrull on TV almost every week having subpar matches, and then here's the match with Dijak, and it stands out as really good. So, you know, you got to give Dijak credit there.
Yeah, Ring of Honor, you know, they are just dumb. I mean, they had him and Keith Lee in the same promotion. They never booked it. I just saw Dijak work Ray Rowe, and they had a 4-star match on the Wrestle Circus high pay-per-view, and they never booked these guys against each other. I mean, it's just like, God. Dijak's the guy who just does better away from Ring of Honor, and so it's probably the best thing for him that he's cut the cord with that promotion. He's just going to make his first Evolve updates, and who's he booked against? Keith Lee, you know? I mean, God, what was Ring of Honor waiting for?
I have no idea what they were thinking with this guy. They got him on contract, but again, we talked about his history with Ring of Honor, and they cut the legs out. I mean, I guess they figured because he was so tall, he could live with having his legs cut out so many times, but
right.
Jesus Christ, the guy from the start, I mean, I always harp on it. He started his Ring of Honor career by winning the Top Prospect Tournament and then throwing away his title shot to join a stable. What the fuck was that?
A stable that most of the people aren't even there anymore. You know, yeah. Truth Martini's not there. The girls aren't there. I mean, it's just, for a guy who, and by the time, right, I mean, at this point in his Ring of Honor, he's really, at first he was pretty green, but, you know, he had potential. But finally he starts fulfilling that potential elsewhere, and they still don't know what to do with him. And now they don't even have him. I mean, just bad, bad, bad. Letting a guy like a blue chipper. I mean, they brought in some good talent, but man, they've let some Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak leave in the last 2 months back to back. Those are blue chippers. Those are guys who could be headlining anywhere in the world, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
Unbelievable. Just bad moves after bad moves, and then you get wonder why Ring of Honor is so stale and predictable, and you know what, I heard spoilers, because obviously Keith Lee isn't there anymore, so they had to go find a place for Shane Taylor, and I hear he's part of the freaking Rebellion, you know, like, really, you can't come up with something better? I mean, God, help us, you know, ugh, alright man, on that note, why don't we take a break?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. We're back looking at NXT television or internet or what have you. But ooh, it opens up with Patrick Clark versus Sean Maluda. I thought this was decent. What you make of this?
Yeah, you just reminded me, though, that's a little bit of a kind of hot topic right now, the difference between the internet and the television, right? But yeah, I thought,
has Meltzer actually made a statement on that?
I don't know, because the weird thing is that initially the conversation was could CWC count? And he said yes it, or no it couldn't, but not because it's on the internet, because it was a special and it wasn't weekly. So then everyone kind of assumed that that means, that would mean something like CWF would be good. But I don't know that there's any official statement. Who knows? I mean, maybe CWF just didn't get enough votes to even be registered. I mean, it's possible, but it seems unlikely with how much fervor that there was for the show. But I don't know if there's anything official. I haven't heard it.
Yeah, when you go 10 deep on a lot of that stuff, like, I'm shocked, like, Stutzy didn't get any... Yeah, I didn't finish in the top 10 on announcing.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Who knows? Hell, look at it. I mean, it's obviously, then again, if you look at it, I mean, shit, the top four matches were all New Japan matches, right?
Right.
And then the fifth one was freaking a guy from New Japan in it, right?
Yeah, no, exactly.
New Japan ran away with all this stuff. New Japan's a fun promotion, but it's not this be-all, end-all dominating promotion, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, of course New Japan dominated because they're the freshest promotion with the best booked talent in the world and the best talent hands down, right? Of course they're going to win everything. And then meanwhile, CWF can't even get on the fucking honorable mentions, so... it's Meltzer's world.
Yeah, and there's a lot of followers who feel like, it is what it is. The majority doesn't always make it right. I mean, because, you know what, the majority has bad taste a lot of the times, you know, so.
Well, go ahead.
But, you know, whatever. It's just disappointing to see just great promotions that really do a great job getting the most out of everything. And they actually have storylines for everybody and make everything matter. And it's such a well-organized and well-booked promotion. It's just frustrating to me. Ugh. It's just all because of people have their built-in biases. because they don't speak a different language or I mean I like New Japan, don't get me wrong, but I just don't see how it's this monster of a promotion that can't stand up to anything.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, I saw, you know, friend of the show, I'll say, Dylan Hales, talk about, you know, if you have such a problem with the voting, this and that, just unsubscribe to Wrestling Observer, don't pay attention to it, blah, blah, blah. And then it made me think, now I'm just kind of like, you know, like, it's tough because they have almost like this weird, I hate to say it in such a crass terms, but it's really like the best way to describe it, like kind of a fat girl syndrome where like Juan is, or, you know, Wrestling Observer is like the hot chick at the party, and then PW Torch is like the fat chick at the party. But the thing about PW Torch is they cover this stuff. Bruce Mitchell goes on and on about CWF. They have now actual columns where they cover it on the website. They had Travis Bryant was on, and he was openly talking, and he did a review about OTT the other day, and I was just like, on his podcast, he's talking about OTT, you know, he said, oh, this is like the second time I've watched the show, but still, I'm just like, at least they're covering it. It's just, it's always so funny to me, Observer gets all the respect, and everybody talks about Observer because of Dave, but the Torch, if you're really wanting coverage of all wrestling, and you want something where it's got a lot of people and they act a lot more professional, you know, and this isn't an advertisement for the Torch, but realistically, if you're only paying attention to Observer and you're getting upset because all they talk about is WWE and New Japan and they don't even cover Evolve, maybe give somebody else a shot. You know, there is the Torch, there's Wrestling with Words, you know, there's Voices of Wrestling, there's even just what happens on the PTBN, you know, website, which doesn't get super in deep in a lot of wrestling review, but they cover stuff other than just WWE and New Japan. So, you know, don't buy into the Observer stuff and treat it like gospel. Just kind of ignore it is my recommendation.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about the Observer is when they do their history pieces, that's when they're at their best. And there's no one who does know history better than Dave Meltzer, probably. But he also has a lot of wacky takes on wrestling. And he has a lot of followers who ape what he says and stuff. So if there was, I wish they were as knowledgeable as Dave when it comes to the history of wrestling, though.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Let's move off that. what do you think of the Patrick Clark-Sean Maluda match?
Patrick Clark is playing up like the mind game shtick with his character. I think it was interesting the way that they work that, where it's it doesn't really hesitate or doesn't really kind of take Maluda back at all. He just keeps working. He doesn't register to the weirdo-ness or anything about it. Lots of weak looking strikes on the comeback from Clark. I think he needs to stay away from that. He gets the win with a knee rocker dropper move. Feels just like incredibly forced. I think it's really interesting to now start doing vignettes and now pretend like Clark is serious. We've seen him enough times, not even just like he started a new character. I mean, we've seen him in this character as kind of a joke jobber guy. Now we're supposed to take him seriously. And yeah, as I said, his strikes look weak. Maluda doesn't even play into the gimmick at all. He just kind of no-sells the weirdo gimmick. So for me, this was a one-star match. I don't think it achieved any purpose at all.
I liked it a little better, but yeah, but it wasn't anything to write home about. And then we get this Sanity promo. What'd you make of this?
Good stuff from EY. I thought it was nice that they seem to have been smart. They call an audible and they see that, you know, Nikki Storm is kind of the star of the group, so they let her actually talk in the end, which she hasn't said anything. And I think she's the only other member of Sanity to actually say anything at this point now, which is good. And it shows that they definitely get it. I just don't get why they're still calling out Ty Dillinger. This is another one of these feuds where I'm like, this is still going. Fuck. Like, I like a nice, you know, a feud that kind of goes and has swerves and this and that. But this feud doesn't feel like it has much to it, except for that it just keeps going. And NXT has kind of fallen into this pattern. I mean, it got really bad with Nakamura and Joe, where it just felt like it just kept happening. And there wasn't really new stuff developing. It was just, hey, this feud's still happening, and there's not anything behind it, no real reason. I mean, why does Ty Dillinger want this match? He's already made it very clear he's not interested in wrestling these guys anymore, and they just won't leave him alone. And that's just kind of boring to me.
I'm with you. What do you think the Sanity? Do you think this is kind of like the Wyatt's light?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's very similar, and in a lot of ways, it is similar to the Wyatt's as well, because a lot of their programs felt like they didn't have a direction, and the promos didn't have a direction, and it was just kind of treading water just to tread water.
Yep, I'm with you. What'd you make of Asuka versus Peyton Royce?
I thought Peyton Royce looked good. There was a funny part in the beginning where they're standing in the ring and Billy Kay is pointing towards Peyton Royce's stomach saying, you know, oh, she's gonna win the belt. But in my head, I was thinking Billy Kay was explaining to her, she needs to take that title so she can cover up the hole in her clothes. Because she's like pointing right at it. But yeah, I thought the match itself was it had a weird start. Because they really were trying to put Peyton Royce over as being her equal. I think they did a good job with the standoff. The standoff didn't feel forced. As they kind of kept looking for strikes, ducking and dodging, moving around. And then they had just a regular standoff. It didn't have the Jerry Lynn RVD. They flip into a pose where they're looking like they're going to punch each other. They just kind of both awkwardly looked at each other and were like, oh, okay. I think we almost got this. Or, you almost got me, I almost got you, which was good. Then Asuka kind of starts showing, she's just slightly faster, slightly stronger, slightly better. But Peyton Royce is like almost at her level. So I thought that they did a good job there, but I just thought it was odd that they would kind of tell that story for the match. Peyton's working over the arm quite a lot. I liked the kind of Cobra clutch with the body scissors, that she's kind of got locked in when we come back from break. And again, WWE Network break, where all they did was cut out like how we started and got into the heat segment. Yep. And it was just an advertisement for, hey, the network that you're watching exists, yeah. Which is nice.
That's so dumb. Why are you having a freaking cutaway to for an interview? Not an interview, but for a advertisement for the network that you're watching. You're already paying for it. Dumb.
Yeah, I'm not into that part of it. I think it's interesting they have Peyton Royce start acting really cocky way too soon. I don't understand, and it feels just like forced. Like you just go, oh, that's her thing. She's cocky, so you have to put that in there. It didn't make sense in this setting at all. Why wouldn't she be focused? This is like, it's kind of like Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey, you know. And it wasn't like as soon as Holly Holm's game plan against Ronda Rousey was working, she didn't then start acting cocky. No, she was there to do a specific task. She was focused, and she wanted to beat her and prove that she could be beaten. So she stayed on it, and that's kind of the position that we're supposed to think that the Australian girls are in. They think that they can beat Asuka. They have a game plan to beat Asuka. So why wouldn't they fucking stick to it? It just doesn't make any sense in that regard. But yeah, Asuka comes back, she's, you know, fast, fiery baby face. She eventually does the flying cross arm breaker into the chicken wing to get the submission. But I thought a lot of this stuff was awkward, a lot of issues with the storytelling of the match. And I don't really know why you take your unbeatable kind of top baby face, who's obviously building to a bigger program with another unbeatable force. You kind of made her look human here, which I don't think was a good move for Asuka, but I gave it 2 stars. I was not in love with this match.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm with you on there, where it was entertaining enough. Bottom line is, Asuka has this badass vibe to her, but they try to make her a little bit more docile here. We get this feeling out process until Asuka pisses Royce off, and then Royce ends up posting Asuka, and Royce is on the arm. And Asuka makes a good comeback with a comeback. Love Royce going back to the arm. I like that psychology. Still, Asuka is too much. I question the finish of Asuka hooking on the Asuka lock after she's had her arm worked over. And, I mean, they could have gone something different. Peyton just, I mean, from a, she gets it personality-wise, it seems like. And her psychology was decent here, but there's something about her. I just don't buy her as a tough woman, tough wrestler at all. And then we see the Mean Girls post-match attack her and go after the arm. And then Ember Moon saves to, you know, feature Ember and Asuka, which that could be a fun match. What do you think? Fun match?
Oh, for sure. But I think that their standoff here was really awkward. They need to work on that. But definitely a fun match.
Yeah, they do. They do. It was really, really awkward. Then we got we recap Cassius Ono's return. It's a, you know, video package. Do you really need to? I don't think we really need to cover it since it just happened. We covered it last week.
Yeah, no, and I think that they did a good job weaving the Nakamura story into the Cassius Ohno story here, so you kind of kill two birds with one stone, but yeah, it was just what happened last week.
And then Regal gets some airtime, and he sets up a March 15th match between Rude and Ohno, which is an odd match, odd date to set it up. You'd think they'd be setting it up for the NXT special, but it's just weird setting it up for the 15th. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do, but who knows if maybe Hiro's fast-tracked for the main event scene and they're just going to do this as a token title match for Rude, or this is just the first story, the first step. But in a lot of ways, it doesn't make sense because you just think back to the Samoa Joe story, how the whole story was built around the fact that he felt like it took too long for him to get a title shot because Regal says you don't just show up and get a title shot, but Cassius Ohno can just come back and he gets a title shot? I don't know.
Yep, I guess that's what's happening. And then we get a Wolfgang video package. I thought this was well done. And then you kind of really start to... I think it helped him, and it helps people start caring about him some more. What do you think?
Yeah, and looking back on it again, it feels like they did the right thing putting the title on Tyler Bate, because it does feel like coming out of it, Tyler Bate probably needed the title the most to make him, and Wolfgang, I think personality and his look can really put him over the top, and it just goes to show here, I think he's definitely, just based on this, everybody's already intrigued in him.
Agreed. And then we get the main event of DIY, who, you know, are making the case right now being the best tag team in wrestling, versus the Authors of Pain in a rematch from their last NXT special. What'd you make of this match, man?
Good stuff. You know, it was obviously the finish and the cutoff and the way that goes. I mean, it's angle stuff and it's to keep the story going, but it does affect the overall rating of the match. I think I liked the big long heat segment to start out on Ciampa. Occam again is just, he's standing out to me a lot as the guy who gets it just a little bit more, better personality, mugs to the camera in a way where he always feels like he's really in the fight. Sometimes Rezar feels like he doesn't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but Occam always is in there and he knows what's up, and it does make a big difference. I think Ciampa fighting back here and there when he can was good. The fire from underneath. I like that they miss it. You know, he dives out of the way from a falling elbow drop, and that's how he gets the tag, and Johnny is just on fire. And this is another one where it just shows, I mean, DIY have totally different matches all the time. I mean, the guys are able to put together totally different structures. As here, it's Johnny's fired up. He does the kind of lots of diving. That's his attacks. Some misdirection spots and stuff like that. They do the double strike in the corner, but I think it was Occam moves out of the way, but they just catch him on the other corner. I think that was good stuff there. I feel like Ciampa tags back in a little bit too quick, but that, I think, plays somewhat into the story there. Long double submission spot out of the Super Collider, which I thought was great, and that sets up Revival coming out, and they ruin the fun. I gave it 3.5 stars for the action, but I would have liked, you know, a regular finish on the match. But, you know, it's storyline. I get where they're going here, so that's fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I enjoyed this. I gave it like 3.5 stars. I liked the double spear by DIY early. And I love how they need the numbers game, because Authors of Pain are so much bigger than them. So every time DIY was making a comeback or was or in control, is because they had the numbers with them, or they hit a double team move, or they're using quick tags. I really like that. Eventually, though, the Authors of Pain start putting the hurt to DIY. Hot tag to Gargano, but can't take him down until he hits a tope, and then he hits a somersault senton. This is all action, but with a really great story behind it. Revival attack at the finish, so it's either setting up a three-way or something. That's what I think. But overall, I thought this was a really excellent match. That again, DIY was just really bringing it this year.
Yeah, they're really standing out as a very competent tag team, and as I said, can tell totally different stories match to match. can have different structures, all that. And I think that the post-match stuff with Revival, as I said, while it does affect my overall enjoyment of the match, it was done really well in the context of what's going on, because it helps Revival continue with this kind of slow tweener turn where you go, yes, they're assholes for breaking it up, but also it's kind of cool the way that they outsmarted the Authors of Pain and were able to hit them with that shatter machine. That was kind of, you know, so the crowd's like a winner, and it's that argument about, like, Brock Lesnar. It's, if he's destructive and dominant for too long, it's going to turn him babyface, because crowds like guys who can figure it out. Even if they're a little bit underhanded, you know that the Revival have figured out a way to take it to the Authors of Pain, so you kind of are excited to see him do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And on that note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we're going to be looking at Evolve 78. And it opens up with two guys we like, Matt Riddle versus Anthony Henry. Henry making his big debut in Evolve. He made a big impact on FIP, Styles Clash. Had that great match with Freddie Ahai. What'd you make of this one?
Their match with each other last time I felt really had a great... It was just really great, honestly. And this one just... It missed, I think, what made that match so good, which was Henry's kind of cocky confidence. And here, Henry did not feel sure of himself. And he really kind of was... He felt like a shrinking violet, honestly. And I don't know if he's just like... Because he's in a different setting, or if he feels like it's a bigger crowd, or it's just a crowd he doesn't know. But, I mean, he did not bring it in this match, honestly, and it really affected it for me. That being said, I don't think it was bad. Riddle's striking game looked better here than it has in the past. And he's really gone away from doing any grappling, which is kind of interesting in a match like this. There's some nice back and forth, but I think the story of the match was Riddle was constantly... had the slight edge on him, constantly had control. And who knows, maybe it's a Gabe thing and they want to tell a story and they don't like guys to come in overconfident and look really good against their top guys instantly. But I think that Henry really held back here, and it felt a lot of it to do with him just not coming across sure-footed. I gave it 3.25 star, that still being said, and I really enjoyed the match. But I just think it sucks to see guys have such a good match and then have their next match just not live up to that.
Yeah, I still enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5. I thought there was some nice grappling. I thought Henry hit this really nasty kick. We see a Riddle comeback, and Riddle's focusing on Henry's back. Loved Henry's tope. And yeah, he's working it a little different, like, more like he's like a plucky underneath guy, and Riddle's the established vet. So the dynamic's a little different. I thought Riddle gave a lot to Henry to help elevate him, and I liked the finality and the finish. And I liked where it was, where they told a kind of like a 50-50 story, but eventually the established star was just too much to handle. 3.5, but yeah, I can see where you're coming from completely. Next match was Austin Theory versus Darby Allin. Allin is just a really innovative guy and crazy. Theory does an awesome moonsault into the crowd. Overall, I thought this was a fun spot fest. 2, 3, 4s. What about you?
Yeah, what's funny is I gave it the same as you, but I came out of it with more of a bad taste in my mouth than it seems you did. I gave it 2 3/4. I think Darby Allin is kind of the vet in this setting. Austin Theory is very young, very green, and Darby Allin didn't do anything to kind of hold the match structure together. On top of the fact that Darby Allin's kind of stick is wearing thin for me, as I think I see Jason Kincaid there, and while they're very dissimilar and they have a lot of like different things, I think that they fill the same role as kind of an outsider weirdo who does high risk craziness. And I just feel like Jason Kincaid does it in such a unique and awesome way, and Darby Allin just continuously kind of is the same. He's got a literal Reckless Youth gimmick, not like he's trying to impersonate Reckless Youth from the indies, where it's like the idea is he just doesn't care about his body. But he doesn't, again, as I said, he doesn't do anything here to kind of hold the narrative. Theory comes across like a blue chipper guy, as you were talking earlier about Tahir. Theory's a guy who feels like a pretty solid prospect, but, you know, he's still very green, needs to put it together. And then another thing that hurt this match for me a lot was Priscilla Kelly. Great, you know, obviously great looking girl, involved with the Carnies. She's fantastic doing her own thing, but I felt like she didn't have good direction here, and she just felt like she was out there making faces where I don't know if she knew what, you know, she was supposed to be doing or what message she was supposed to be trying to get across, and it really did feel that way. So as I said, 2¾ star, which is still not bad. Obviously not a bad rating, but it's Evolve, and there's a certain standard that I expect in Evolve matches.
I'm with you. Now, I want to talk about Jason Kincaid a little bit. And, I mean, we have this matchup with Ethan Page. You know, I like how Kincaid's booked in Smoky Mountain with the Cabal, where I think he's more of a natural heel. I mean, his offense is babyfacious, but he just comes across like he needs a group with him. And he should be a top-level heel with a group. It just feels like he's kind of miscast and evolved. What do you think about that statement?
It's very interesting as you say that, because I turn around and think of the Uncle Johnny stable with Darby Allin kind of as the lead, and it is another one where it feels like they're kind of being misused here in Evolve, as you say it. I can definitely see that. I think the NWA Smoky Mountain stuff that I've seen with Jason Kincaid is very good, but there was also the stuff in Ring of Honor where I even said, like, when he was in Ring of Honor, oh, it would be better if they're pushing him as a heel, because I didn't think he was an effective face. But I think his face work with Ethan Page so far has worked for me, and his face work in Evolve has been good. But there's also an aloofness to his character that in some ways you could say is reminiscent of Rob Van Dam, with the kind of spirituality side rather than the kind of psychedelic drugs. He's expanding his mind more with just thought experiments, and they're not necessarily implicitly saying that it's because he's taking psychedelic drugs, but I think there isn't like kind of an implication there, which does lead itself to, I would say, more of a tweener character. But it is a little bit hard to push that way and to even have it work. But his in-ring, I think, in Evolve has been very good, and he's really put it together in a way where a lot of his kind of wackier stuff doesn't come across contrived. And that's what I've been really enjoying for him. The deeper character stuff, I'm kind of giving him a pass because I just don't know where they're going. I mean, they're just starting to do video packages and stuff.
Yeah, I just didn't like this, man. I give it a star and 3/4. And I don't blame Jason Kincaid. I don't even know if I blame Ethan Page. I just don't think they have a lot of chemistry together. And I just wasn't getting behind it at all. Then we got Jock and Dickinson versus the Gatekeepers. What'd you make of this?
Jock and Dickinson are very interesting because they are really pushed completely different than anything else in Evolve. I mean, it's like night and day sometimes, their matches versus everyone else's matches. They do good here. They're constantly kind of applying force. They really, in some ways, are just like eating up most of the match. I mean, going at all times at 1,000 miles per hour. And it, again, as I said, it really stands out. I think the Gatekeepers did good in that any offense that they were able to pull off looked like it really changed the tempo and was very effective. But, I mean, Jocka and Dickinson, especially Dickinson, would then just go right back on the attack. And Dickinson is like a million miles an hour kind of guy, and it shows here quite a bit. I give this 2.5 stars. I think this really felt like a filler match, which is kind of, again, another thing that doesn't really fit in on an Evolve show, I think, in a lot of ways.
I'm with you. And then the Jocka Dickinson Gatekeepers, is that what we just talked about?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good tag, and I thought it was a good brawl. It just wasn't blow away. I thought it was 2¾. It's just good, solid stuff. And then we got ACH versus Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. I thought it started off pretty eh. And then we get this big dive by ACH, and then it starts heating up. And we follow that up with a splash, and ACH goes after Williams, lands on Williams, eats Williams' feet. Williams now is targeting the neck. And, I mean, I'm liking the story, DDT by Hot Sauce, clothesline by Williams. I thought ACH showed good babyface fire. And then what they were doing was good, but I just wasn't connecting with the crowd. And in turn, wasn't connecting with me. So I gave it 3.25. On paper, I thought the match was better than my star rating. But it just didn't click overall. What about you?
I could see that, but I also, I guess, yeah, like the crowd wasn't getting into it, but I was getting into it. There was a good narrative here, and I think, you know, pun intended, I think they're trying to show ACH evolve, which is kind of funny as I think there was another character, I can't remember who it was now that I think about it, but there was somebody else who felt like that's the story. Oh, it was Jocka and Dickinson. It felt like the story was going Jocka and Dickinson were going to kind of change into evolve wrestlers by joining Catchpoint and all that, and it felt like that was completely dropped, and now that story is kind of being put on ACH, as here he really seemed to be, he was kind of learning, doing a lot of facial reactions in the beginning to show that, like, he was perplexed and kind of putting stuff together and figuring everything out. The boot up on the splash you mentioned, I think that they did a great job really capitalizing on how nasty that looked. Because, I mean, it looked really bad. Like, ACH really, it looked almost like he got botched and ACH potatoed himself on Tracy's foot, which was good because then they played off of it where Tracy was in full control after that as he's viciously grinding on ACH. And so for me, I think this is one of those Gabe moments where I'm, you know, I'm kind of unapologetically a fan of really similar stuff to what Gabe likes. And that isn't necessarily always what the crowd there likes, but I love it. So the storytelling in here for me is like on point with what I want. Loved the finish. I thought it was hot, and it really showed again. ACH is becoming an evolved wrestler. He's becoming a, you know, a five tool athlete rather than just the high flying guy. And I think, God, this is what I was begging for in ROH, and it felt like it was happening, but it was really subtle. And it feels like Evolve is smart enough to really push this as an interesting story. So for me, this was a 3.5-star match.
Okay. Well, next up was Cobb and Drew Galloway. What'd you make of this one?
I think they did a really good job in doing something that's kind of underrated or underappreciated, is that they were doing a Hoss fight that had no background. So there wasn't bad blood or heat between the guys. So they're feeling each other out in a way where it feels really epic. It's, you know, it's King Kong and Godzilla, but they're not pissed off. They're like trying to out-wrestle each other. Drew Galloway obviously quickly learns what he's up against, as Cobb can just catch any flying crossbody. He catches him, throws him into a vertical suplex. You know, he tries a lot of different things on Cobb, and Cobb is just this indestructible monster, which is, I mean, really what I liked about him in Lucha Underground was this kind of just keeps coming, he's a force of nature thing, and I think he's doing it even better here in Evolve. It was part of why I gave that Zack Sabre Jr. match in RPW such a high rating at the time, is I think Cobb as an indestructible monster is fantastic, and I think, again, he looked really great here. Galloway keeps going for him, but he just can't, you know, and then eventually he posts the shoulder. Now he's stomping on the shoulder, and, you know, I think that was really good. But Cobb is just so gifted that, I mean, he's faster, he can fly, he can flip, he's stronger, he's a better grappler. So Galloway keeps looking for the arm, he hits the kind of arm breaker, the coat of arms, but you know, it's just, it's not going to keep him down. I love them trading headbutts back and forth, another spot that really works when you got two big guys going at it like this. They're milking the drama. This feels like a major war as they're trying to attempt backslides on each other. Again, it's just, it's coming down to, these are two big behemoths with Cobb just being that much better. But Galloway is able to kind of take advantage of him. He disorients him. Boom, hits the double arm DDT, gets the pin. And I gave this 3.75 star because I just thought this was a great way to do an epic first time encounter and not have it come across like it's a blood feud situation. It's, you know, it's two guys figuring each other out.
Yeah, I went 4 stars, and this was actually my favorite match of the night. I love Cobb tossing Galloway around. I like the brawling on the floor. I thought Cobb was having a really good shine here. And then Cobb gets his arm posted, and I love the under the ring spot. Galloway's heat is really aggressive here. Big top rope arm drag that Cobb sells big. Cobb catches him with a big over the head belly to belly. Divorce court by Galloway on the arm. Galloway with a head, but that gets a oh my god for me. Like that headbutt, I was like, oh my god. Like when it was happening live. And then Galloway's back to the arm. I thought that was fantastic. The whole, I thought they told a really good story. And they had action, big bombs. But at heart, it was about Galloway ruining Cobb's arm, which has been a narrative throughout the Evolve. I mean, that's part of that was what happened with Timothy Thatcher and that match. And I felt this was just a kind of like a continuation of that. And with that storytelling, I got 4 stars. And then this leads to Galloway calling out Bro and Cobb gets accidentally bumped, and he gives him the tour of the islands and leaves Riddle laying. Pretty fun stuff, and makes you wonder where they're going to go. What do you think of the angle?
Yeah, loved the angle, and I like the idea of keeping the focus away, because I think as we get into the next match, I think that they've really got something that they may not even notice yet, or maybe they are really smart, but they've got two indestructible monsters. Even with Cobb losing here, he feels like an indestructible monster. So to me, I'm just kind of like, they got these two big behemoths that when they get ready to have them clash could be a big fucking deal. And so the post-match angle was good at that. Cobb is a loose cannon who in a split second could take anybody apart.
Well, I agree. And the only thing, the finish was a little abrupt, but I liked it here. But I thought they should have separated maybe this match and then the Keith Lee, Zack Sabre Jr. match, because they also had a pretty fast, out-of-nowhere ending. So I don't mind that, but I don't think it should happen on back-to-back matches. Do you think that kind of, for me, that kind of hurt the Sabre Jr. Keith Lee match?
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying there. And I think part of it, too, is that what they're calling the ground zero now from Keith Lee is, I mean, I'm not conditioned in any way to think of that as a finishing move for him. So yes. It felt very much out-of-nowhere. And with the story of the match, I don't think anybody would have predicted that was going to be the finish at that time.
Yep, yeah, and so it was a little sudden. So having back-to-back sudden finishes, you know, it just kind of it took the shine off it a little bit here. But I still liked the match. I gave Zack Sabre Jr. Keith Lee 3 3/4. I liked Lee using his weight early on and size. Lee's after the back. Loving watching Zack work underneath because it was a totally different match. Watching Zack get dominated, most of the time he takes up a good 65-70% of the match. Here he's on defense and he's using all his limb work and stuff as hope spots, and I really like that. I like this dynamic here. His facials of awe and shock are great by Zack. Like he can't believe all the tools that Keith Lee has. Really liking Zack Sabre Junior submission hope spots. I'm loving the storytelling here. The low level drop kick by Zack, but Zack's back to the arm. Lee powers out and is back in control. Zack makes a comeback, but bam, power slam by Lee. Nowhere. I don't know where it gets the victory. Still a good match, but I felt like if they would have maybe built something a little differently in the finish, I would even like the match even more. Well, what'd you make of it?
I agree with you on the finish, but, you know, I think it's a story about Keith Lee's just dominance. But it really did feel like Zack was putting everything into this match. From the big penalty kick, which was one of the best ones he's ever done, and a lot of people that were there are putting it over huge about just how awesome it was to see live. And it was really funny because they go from that into Keith Lee kind of doing the midget spot where he kicks out and launches him into the air. So it was like crazy. And then from there, another point where Keith Lee goes for the spirit bomb, Zack sneaks out the back door and then charges in with the charging lifter. And the first one looks like he put his entire body into it to where he crashes down to the mat. And I'm like, he hit the move and I don't know if he's going to get back up. It looked like it took everything he had to put that in there. But yeah, I mean, lots of just amazing. I mean, the way that Zack Sabre Jr. can work, as you said, technical style as a plucky underdog babyface, getting hope spots and submissions is really fucking impressive. When you think about not too long ago, I mean, technical grappling shoot style, still not really popular, but I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. took really close to the World of Sports style and has mainstreamed and kind of taught the audience to take it that way, where they get behind it the way you think about people getting behind arm drags from, you know, Rick Steamboat. People will get behind a triangle from Zack Sabre Jr. Super impressive. Again, Keith Lee's facials, phenomenal. His presence, all of his little stuff. The guy just gets it through and through. I gave this 4 stars. I thought this was fantastic, and it was tied for my match of the night.
And that, I'm guessing, is Yay High and
Thatcher.
Thatcher?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, okay, so this is kind of, in some ways, you know, everyone knows I'm a huge Tim Thatcher mark. That's just been proven time and time again. I love the way he wrestles. I don't care that necessarily crowds don't always get into it, because I get into it.
Yeah, speaking of that, did you see the Thatcher Cobb match from Rumble Weekend?
Yeah, I enjoyed that match a lot.
I gave it 4 stars, and I was shocked how it got shit on, because it reminded me of like an old school NWA title match, and I could not believe the amount of hate and visceral I saw online about it, because I'm like, and maybe it's just people just don't like selling. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But that match had great selling, great story. Thatcher rooting Cobb's arm. I thought that was an excellent match, and a 4-star match too. But I'm just blown away. But yeah, go on. I'm sorry.
No. I think I had that match either 3¾ or 4-star too. And what's funny is you say people don't like selling, but I think a lot of people give Thatcher a lot of credit and say, yeah, he's one of the best sellers of all time, this and that. But I think it really comes down to, and it's kind of a topic that I've wanted to broach somewhat before, more in depth. I don't know if I'll ever get around to it. But I feel like Thatcher falls in between two schools of thought, and it makes it so a lot of people don't like him, which is a lot of people either have the, I'd say, Dave Meltzer-esque spot, high work rate, almost Ric Flair, Young Bucks thing. That's what good wrestling is. And then other people have the kind of storytelling and emotion is what makes a good match. And you could have a great match that's all worked around one punch, but as long as it's getting a crowd reaction. And I feel like Thatcher doesn't fit either of those molds, so a lot of people don't get into his matches. But I also think he might be one of the best heels going, or he was, and I almost, you know, we're not going to completely review it, but the next night I almost thought that they should have milked it a little bit longer with the amount of heat that he gets. I think he's a guy that they could have kept on top of Evolve as a heel now for even longer, because the crowd fucking hates him. And I think that's
the heat in the Zack Sabre Jr. match between those two. That, I mean, that felt like it was an old school, an 80s style reaction to him, and there wasn't any "this is awesome."
No,
if I'm not mistaken. So it felt like it was something that might be a throwback into the CWF Mid-Atlantic auditorium. Sportatorium. I thought that crowd of the next night really helped. I mean, the ball matches were great, and then the crowd, I thought put a lot of those over the top, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm saying. I feel like the fact that he's seemingly getting more and more heat is what makes me say they should have stuck with it. Because, you know, obviously you don't want to wait until you go too far and then you start losing it. But you also almost don't want to pull the trigger when you're still building. And that's where I felt like they're at with him, is they're still building heat on the guy. But, you know, that's not here.
And I thought he got 2 of his biggest reactions here against Yehi. And then, well, Yehi was big, but against Zack Sabre Jr. was off the chart.
Exactly.
I think I was reading Larry Zonka, or however you pronounce his name, at 411. And he said that they didn't connect in the Thatcher match, and I'm like, are you kidding me? What match are you watching? I mean, sometimes that argument might be true, but that was not the case here.
Yeah, and I just, again, as I said, I think that there's something to be said that when you're still building heat, that might not be the time to kind of back off.
I even think I saw Dylan call the guy out on Twitter about it.
Yeah, and I can't blame him. But this match specifically, as I said, huge Thatcher mark. Think his selling is great. His viciousness is fantastic. But what really stands out here is, I think, a guy that I would have to call my wrestler of the year so far in 2017 in Fred Yehi. I mean, with just the matches that he's seen, I need to go watch the Eric Royal match as soon as we're done recording, to be sure. But I'm looking at this Fred Yehi 2017 year, and I'm thinking, This is a guy who is just special. I think we might have the buddings of a new kind of Bryan Danielson. And I know that sounds like crazy hyperbole, but the shit that he's doing from match to match, being so different, working this basic style that anyone can get behind. I mean, his offense is not over the top complex, but he can grapple with the best of them. But I mean, stomps and kicks, mugging to the crowd, great personality, miracle worker against Brian Cage. You know what I mean? Fucking phenomenal match with Anthony Henry already. That's why I'm just like, this guy is something else. And in this match, he does it. There's ground and pound sequences in this match from Freddie Ahai, something you never see. They come across with viciousness. The selling is through the roof. Picking apart the legs when he has a chance. Locking in different holds. I mean, I got so behind Freddie Ahai, and then he's still in character after the match, so out of it, so fucking annoyed that he didn't win. You could just tell that, you know, he can't just let it go. Like, other guys after the match are kind of just like, oh, you know, whatever, you know, we move on. Freddie Ahai looked like it was still eating him apart as they're leaving the building afterwards, and I was just very impressed with his performance. Timothy Thatcher's phenomenal. I gave this 4 stars. So much good stuff here. This is a match that I highly recommend if you want to kind of have that, as I said, wrestler of the year, match of the year conversation. I think that this is, it may not be match of the year, I would say, but it definitely is another feather in the cap for Freddie Ahai as performer of the year so far.
Yeah, you liked it better, and you're higher on Ahai this year than I am, and I loved Ahai's year this year. I have him right now as my number 3 wrestler of the year. I have AJ number 1 because I thought that Royal Rumble performance is incredible. I thought his performance in the Elimination Chamber was incredible. I really liked his Luke Harper match last week or the other day on SmackDown. And then there's other stuff we've seen of AJ. My second favorite wrestler is this year, or where I think putting it in, is the only thing he doesn't have is like a match of the year contender. But I have him like loads of 4-star matches, and that's actually Jeff Cobb. I think the guy just has lit it up this year with just really strong performances. I've seen him live, I've seen him on tape, I think about 8 times, and I think he's averaging like 3.5 stars to 4 stars every single night he's wrestling. And I have Cobb number 2, and then I have Yehi number 3.
Well, what's funny about you saying that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but really quickly, is I almost want to go on record here because it's something I said in private just the other day about Cobb, is that I'm willing to predict that in 2017, Cobb's going to have a match that I give 5 stars. Because he's probably is my number 2, just like you're saying. I mean, he hasn't had a match of the year yet, but I mean, the guy is just churning out solid upper-tier matches.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him live a lot at Wrestle Circus. I mean, I've seen him more work Elgin. He had a 3.5-star match with Elgin. He had I saw him work ACH. I thought that was a 3.5, 3.75-star match. I mean, I saw him at Evolve. He had that 4-star with Thatcher. He had a 4-star match with Moose. He had a Wrestle Circus show. He just turning him out. Here, I give that his match with Galloway 4 stars. You know, and the guy is just turning him out. And he's like the workman. Like, let's get ready in the morning. Let's do the donuts. And he just hasn't had that flashy, incredible match, but he just had a lot of really strong performances. And it's more of his complete body of work of being consistent on top every single night and not having a bad performance. And I'm not saying Fred has had a bad performance, because he hasn't either. I like Cobb's a little bit more consistent, as in, I think of all the matches I've seen of each of them wrestle, I think my average match rating would be higher for Cobb than it would be for AI.
Yeah, and I can't argue with that. I definitely see where you're coming from. For me, again, it's like that.
And Cobb, I haven't heard anyone really talk about him as being the best wrestler in the world right now.
No, there isn't a lot of talk about it. I mean, I did, you know, have that Sabre-Cobb match as like my number 2 match of the year last year. But I mean, you're right that he is going under the radar for a lot of people.
Yeah. But let me get back to the match. I like Thatcher in control for a bit early. Then Yehi with a flurry, he's working that leg. Thatcher catches and beats on Yehi in the corner. Yehi is attempting the ear head with attacking the ear and the head with knees. Loving Yehi's ground and pound. I absolutely loved it. Yehi back to the to the ear area again. Love the grapevine back to the leg. Love the grapevine stomp. Great falsy on the Yehi roaring elbow. Like, I really bought into that false finish. Crowd wanted a tap on the Koji clutch, but they just don't get it. But overall, a really strong match. I gave it 3.5. I just wasn't as... There was just some stuff that I just didn't get engaged or buy into. Like, a lot of I know, like, I've seen Dylan really liked it. I saw Quinnen really love the match. I just didn't like it at that level.
Yeah, and I can't blame you. I mean, I can definitely see there wasn't a huge emotional connection. I mean, the crowd was definitely reacting to Thatcher, but I don't know that they ever got really hot for Yehi to win like they did for Sabre on the next night. So I can definitely see that. I could also see a couple flaws here and there. And the finish, I mean, the finish could have been maybe a little bit better. So I could definitely see why you picked the match apart.
So how do you pronounce his name? Is it Yehi?
Yehi.
Okay, you just said Yehi. Okay.
Right. Did I?
Yeah, all right. I thought, okay, Alvarez. Right. But yeah, overall, though, I still have to give the show a thumbs up. Easy thumbs up. I mean, the top of the card was just fantastic. What about you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a definite thumbs up. And then it is funny to say, I think we both liked the next night more after saying that this was an easy thumbs up show, because the next night had some real bangers, I would say, as the kids like to call them. Specifically, as we're talking about Cobb, I just want to bring it up. The Cobb-Jocka match, I think, is a feather in the cap for Cobb, in that it's probably the best Jocka match I've seen in a very, very long time. And I think a lot of credit goes to Cobb there.
Yeah, I gave that 3.5. I liked it. It was just a little too short. A little short for my love.
Yeah, no, totally.
But yeah, man, overall, some really strong shows. Man, it just makes me really excited for WrestleMania weekend to see these guys live. And then Freddie and Riddle are going to be down for Wrestle Circus in March. Keith Lee wrestling Sammy Callahan in the main event for Inspire Pro. Yeah, I'm going to see some really good grappling really soon in March.
Yeah, that's exciting. And as we're talking now, I thought about it. I went to that PCW show and saw Cobb have a terrible match with Ryan. So hopefully I could see him have a good match. I think he's got a tag team match coming up at the next PWG show that I believe I have tickets with. Him and Riddle are continuing on their path to the titles, which is very interesting, as there's a three-way tag title match in the main event. So we'll see who maybe they go on to face. But definitely exciting stuff, as we got PWG coming up for me. I mean, I went out of my way to mark all my stuff, so I got a lot of good wrestling to look forward to.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Anything you got to plug, man?
No, just check out all the stuff. Top Beer should get some more love over there on PTBM Pop. Check it out if you like drinking, you don't like drinking. And then, I guess I should plug my next guest for Lucha Undead is actually going to be my co-host tonight, Pete. Or I guess I'm your co-host. I don't know how to even put it, but I'm going to be having you over on Lucha Undead coming up. So if people just can't get enough of us talking, that'll be the place to get it next week, Wednesday, Tuesday range.
There you go. And I did a guest shot on Clotheslines and Headlines this last a couple days ago. And I got to interview Brad Stutz again, talking some more. We didn't go into too much depth on CWF Mid-Atlantic. We actually talked more, I want to say, about... We talked about CWF Mid-Atlantic, but I thought we talked that, but we combined it with a lot more, in-depth booking ideas and more about booking, I would say, than about the promotion in general.
I loved that interview a lot, honestly, so I plugged that as well. I think people need to check it out, because the rapport between you and Brad is good, while not being too familiar to feel like I'm not getting some real questions out of you. You kind of, I mean, you don't take, you know, hold his feet to the fire, because it's hard to really do that to someone who most of the stuff they do is good. But I mean, you don't pull any punches. You ask him some questions that he may or may not really want to answer. So that's nice to hear in an interview.
Cool. I appreciate it. I'm glad you liked it. And also follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Like I said there, I'm probably going to try to change the Twitter since that show is... It was a great run while we did, but it's RSVP. Not RSVP, it's RIP for the time being. You never know. Never say never. I had a blast with those four guys or three guys. And the only problem is we don't remember the password to the Twitter account. So... so it might stick, but man, have a great weekend, everybody, and keep on supporting your indie or international wrestling. See ya.
Reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perceptions are best.
It's so often.